Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
All right, welcome back to the Bench Jockeys. He's here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm Michael Elves, joined in the dugout by my pal Brian Svensson.
Yo!
Good morning. We are hoping that Chris Zook joins us by phone from the bullpen, although he may have taken a bat to it earlier this week.
Oh, he may have. He may have. He's very upset about
that,
the Natties.
You know, I mean, he basically treated it like a Gatorade cooler. He may have done that to the bullpen phone, because he's, as a diehard Expos fan,
the biggest.
Not a big fan of the Expos, as I just coined it earlier today in talking to Jason Pajek.
See, this is something that I just don't understand. Like, my dad's a huge Expos fan as well, right? And, you know, he doesn't have any disinterest towards the Nationals. I mean, he's not obviously cheering for them, but it's not like he's like that. There's not that much hatred. He still hates the Phillies, though, and he still hates the Dodgers for all the times they beat up on the Expos.
So he has enmity towards their old rivals.
Right, which makes sense. I think that makes more sense than me than hating the team. But anyways, the Nationals were incredible. Can we talk about how incredible they were?
Absolutely. And in fact, what I think is incredible, we may be one game away from probably the best pitching matchup
in a long time
in World Series history.
I don't know about in World Series history.
Well, I don't know how many rosters went this deep on both sides.
You got to figure. So when the Phillies won was in 2010, right? Who were they up against?
Okay, so. Was that the Rays? Phillies Rays?
Yeah, right, when the Rays still had David Price.
That was the, like, early Price days.
Right, so that's probably got to be up there. And you also have to consider that maybe... there was 2011, maybe? No, 2009. They won in 2009.
Cole Hamels in Game 1 against... Scott Kazmir? No, he got the loss. Oh, no, he was starter. You had James Shields pitching for Tampa, one game two.
That's pretty close. And I wonder how many of the 90s Braves...
Like game four, you had Joe Blanton? No.
How many of the 90s Braves ones would have been just as good, right? But it's up there.
Oh, yeah. So I guess the question is, who did they square off against on the other side? Because, yeah, absolutely, the Braves rotation. I mean, we're talking about, like, an entirely Hall of Fame squad.
Exactly.
On one side of the ball. But facing them, I can't remember the pitching staffs that they all went up against. I know that I was, you know, speaking in a superlative here to set this up, but I'm really excited because...
It's good. It's really good.
I mean, game one of the NLCS, nearly a no-hitter from the fourth starter.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the Natty's rotation. You know, Anibal Sanchez, someone like no one was talking about as being a difference maker. And, you know, obviously, you've got Max Scherzer, Mad Max. I mean, this is a perpetual all-star and Cy Young candidate.
Right.
And Steven Strasburg.
Yeah, and Patrick Corbin's having a pretty good year as well.
Patrick Corbin is having a quietly good year and was obviously a very strong pitcher when he was on the Diamondbacks as well. Like, I mean, like those three that I think, you know, matches up against that Cole, Verlander, Greinke pretty well. The fact that Sanchez threw a near no hitter, it's like, oh my God, like,
that's the deepest the deepest no hitter since the actual only no hitter in National League playoff history.
Yeah.
Of course, thrown by our boy Doc.
Yes, indeed. Because this Max went out through a nice little game.
Well, he had a no hitter through seven and a third.
And it was the first time that two pitchers had gone that deep with no hitters back to back since Max Scherzer and Anibal Sanchez did it for the Tigers.
That's funny. That's hilarious. That's so...
Back when the Tigers were relevant.
That's so weird. Oh, wow. I never even thought about that. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So I was talking to my dad today about how he thinks the Yankees need to go out and get starting pitching, and he had the phrase or the thought supposition that the Yankees kind of had reached their cap with how few pitchers, the starting pitchers they had. I wonder if the Yankees will finally admit that they need starting pitching this offseason. If they want to win, they can make the playoffs by cobbling together a pitching staff and a bullpen, but the playoffs are very different. And I wonder if this playoffs is kind of proving that, right? The Rays did some okay stuff, but the A's got bounced, despite the fact that they usually use that sort of a system, right? And we're staring down the barrel of potentially a pitching matchup where it's two kind of whatever bullpens backed by two incredibly strong starting rotations. And I wonder if it changes the way the GMs think about the game.
Absolutely. And I mean, if anyone's going to pivot and has the capability to do so, it is Cashman, right? Because this is a guy who...
Yankees decide they actually want to spend money, though.
The history of the Yankees was top dollar... You know, big splashy signings,
right?
And then Cashman pivoted away from that. You know, as soon as Steinbrenner was gone, and he had much more of the control. I mean, obviously, there's still son of Steinbrenner kicking around, but
it's
clearly like a bus situation where Dr. Buss is gone and Jeannie Buss is not quite as involved in the Lakers front office and like acquisition and player personnel stuff. We're seeing this with. Cashman has like way more leeway to do what he wants, and it's been building up his farm system,
right?
And getting guys, you know, at like B plus value rather than like A plus pricing. Like he's kind of applying that like small ball money ball approach to his big market team, and then that leaves him the leeway to do something like a Giancarlo Stanton, although he admittedly like got him on the cheap. But if they're going to sign long term, they have the cash to do so. And so, I mean, and this is one thing I wanted to maybe pour one out. As much as I loathe the Yankees, I wanted to pour one out for CC Sabathia.
Yeah,
who really, if this was going to be his last pitch in professional baseball, it ended poorly.
Yep.
Obviously comes in the eighth, throws 20 pitches, and then tweets something. And you could tell when he planted his foot that something was going
something
on.
Something was wrong.
He's pulled from the game. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer, but he's had a heck of a career.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, has had a couple of really big moments in the postseason, both with the Yankees and with Cleveland.
Milwaukee as well, right?
And Milwaukee, that's right. That the one year that like interregnum year. Generally a good guy, right? Like, I mean,
yeah,
pretty good reputation as like a good teammate.
I follow Phil Hughes on Twitter and interact with him, and he's been all this whole entire season talking about how important of a mentor and how good of a human being CC Sabathia is.
Yeah, like he's got a great rep.
Yeah,
and. Has always been like a good presence in baseball, and yeah, if he's doing something like a mentorship to Phil Hughes, I imagine he's done it to other pitchers as well. But he was one of those big money splashy signings, right? Like he was part of that same period when I guess it was AJ Burnett, CeCe, I'm blanking on the first baseman that came over from Atlanta.
Teixeira?
Mark Teixeira. Like, there was, like a foursome that were, like, kind of the last Yankees, like, marquee move, right? Like, the kind of move you expect from the Yankees where they basically bought all of the considered top free agents
right
in an offseason and were like, here, we don't care about the luxury tax.
Which, I think it's so silly that teams like that shouldn't care about the luxury tax. Sports are, I believe at least, and the government obviously does because there's antitrust laws. Mm-hmm. Sports are a public trust. Therefore, I think the owners should be obligated to spend as much as they can in order to try and provide a winning team, right? As much of an enjoyable, entertaining product as possible. And that includes, you know, the Yankees still, even if they spent $100 million over the luxury tax, would still make, whatever, like $250 million worth of profits. Not gross, net profits every single year. So, like, just spend the money, man. This is another thing that's been going on right now with the Glazers in Manchester United about how they're not spending money over there, and yet they're taking, like, a $500 million a year salary for themselves. And I just think it's ridiculous, man. Owners need to spend like they plan on winning, right? That's the goal. Spend like you're trying to win. Don't spend like you're trying to win unless it costs a certain amount of money. Spend like you want to win. It's a public sports or a public trust.
There's definitely teams that behave as if they have a hard cap on things that has, like, nothing to do with what's happening on the field.
Yeah.
And you can tell, right? Like, that they're just not involved in any of the, like, in-season big trade rumors. That they're just quiet because it's, everyone knows they're not a market for that.
Yeah.
And it is disappointing because as a fan, I think the expectation and kind of the one-to-one deal that you have with your team is that they're going to try.
Yeah, exactly.
That you accept that they might fail because, you know,
only one
95% of the teams lose.
Only one team wins. But yeah, you know, I will accept going here and spending money on your product and money on merch if you agree as an owner that you're going to spend money to try and win. And that's why it's so frustrating. Like, I understand the logic behind tanking. I do. I get it, right? It's the best way for you to, or for teams to rebuild in order to attempt to win. And I get that. But at the same time, like, it is disappointing as a fan to see your team actively choose to tank when there was another option that included just spending more money and making a run that way. The Jays are a perfect example of that, about how they could have gone into the past two off seasons, spent money, and basically been like the Brewers. You know, they could have made a trade for Christian Yelich. They could have signed Lorenzo Cain. They could have spent money in pitching. And they could have basically have been, you know, the Brewers competing for a wild card spot every single year. And that's, you know, that's what you should be doing. And the Yankees should be doing that. The Yankees should not be afraid of, not that I want the Yankees to be good because I don't, but the Yankees should not be afraid of the luxury tax. The Red Sox should not be on the verge of trading Mookie Betts because they're afraid of the luxury tax. That's ridiculous.
It's kind of incredible. I mean, obviously, we're through the looking glass a bit with the Red Sox. You know, obviously, like, not even a year after they win the World Series, the GM that made that happen
is fired. Fired.
Is let go.
Gone. They're probably going to let go of the manager as well. Like, Cora might fall on the blade for that. And they're going to have, I just don't get it. I just do not understand. Like, Mookie Betts is the third best player in baseball, like, position player,
way up there.
Yeah,
absolutely,
like a top five position player in baseball, absolutely 100%. And you're not willing to spend the money on him because you're afraid of the luxury tax, and that's ridiculous. I just don't.
Well, obviously, so game four, it was delayed a day because of weather. So it happened last night in the ALCS. Astros, Carlos Correa and George Springer both hitting three-run home runs and taking the game from the Yankees. And that leaves us with a do-or-die game five in New York for James Paxton, the Big Maple.
Yeah.
Squaring off against Justin Verlander. So a nice pitching battle.
I love me the Big Maple, but he's not been great in the playoffs. He's been okay, but I don't know.
No, it's not. He's not necessarily the pitcher that he was in the regular season. And of course, you know, if any team has an answer for a pitcher's stuff, it's the bats of the Astros. I mean, this is a really quality hitting team.
Yeah, right? So
like you've got slugging capability, but they also are like good switch hit. Like they can shift to singles and bunts and like just manufacturing runs as well. Like they don't just go into the three true outcome style of like.
Oh, exactly. They've got such a wide variety of bats in the way that they go about it. They have a lot of contact guys, but then you still have to face like Yordan Alvarez, for example. The Astros up 3-1. Are we willing to put the Yankees to bed? They have to beat Verlander and Gerrit Cole each in order to claw back into this, and then they still have to beat Zach Greinke to polish it off. Are we willing to put the Yankees to bed?
Last night on MLB.com, Matt Kelly wrote a piece about teams that have come back from 3-1 deficits, and it's actually a surprisingly lengthy list.
Huh.
So the most recent of which was, of course, the Cubs.
Right.
Who came back from a 3-1 deficit against Cleveland in the 2016 World Series. You've got 2012's Giants over the Cardinals in the NLCS. 07 Red Sox over Cleveland. 04, of course, the Red Sox-Yankees.
But that was 3-0, too. Like,
that's the most historic. But, yeah, talking about like a deficit of this depth. Marlins-Cubs, which, of course, is the Bartman series. You've got several series that are, going back to like the 79 World Series, the We Are Family Pirates.
So I guess
over
that's
the
fair.
Orioles.
I guess that's fair.
It's doable, but I really, I think this is like their last stand tonight.
They have to. I mean, obviously they have to win.
Obviously if they don't win, they obviously done, but like they need to really come correct tonight.
I agree.
In order to have like any sense of momentum going back to Houston to try to crawl back. Houston, I really think we're looking at a Houston Washington World Series, and that, like I said, I'm very excited about this pitching matchup.
I actually pulled up one that I thought is maybe comparable.
Okay.
Maybe comparable. The 96 World Series between the Yankees and the Braves. So the Braves pitching staff included John Smoltz, Tom Glavine, Greg Maddux, Steve Avery, and Jason Schmidt. So that's...
I would say, let's look at the three.
Okay.
Right? Like,
for,
and
sure.
Obviously, as we said, 3v3. On the Braves side, it's...
And then
unquestionably
on the Yankees, and you can take your pick of three, but Andy Pettit, I think, is
ostensibly like, who did they roll out 1, 2, 3?
Andy Pettit, David Cone, and Kenny Rogers, and they also had Dwight Gooden in there as well, late Dwight Gooden, but still Dwight Gooden.
Right.
So yeah, that's pretty good as well.
In the realm. Absolutely. The other one I was looking at, you know, because I was surprised, of course. One of the Braves series was 91 against the Twins.
Right.
And obviously Jack Morris, Hall of Fame pitcher, was great in that series.
Correct.
Kevin Tapani and Scott Erickson were the 2 and 3. And Tapani was surprisingly good.
Yeah, but I mean, the same thing with you kind of like putting some doubt on the Yankee staff. Like, there's just a little bit of, you know.
And this is the thing. Like,
it's tough.
I can't remember how well regarded that staff was at the time, in the midst of it. He was a workhorse. He pitched 244 innings, and he had a 2.99 ERA with a 16-9 win-loss record over the course of the season. You know, like, decent peripherals. But I don't think anyone thought of Kevin Tapani at the time in the same level that you would think of, like, a Strasburg.
No. No, and if you're really thinking about, like, full-on, like, crazy, like, top-to-bottom pitching duels, like, we're having to go back to, like, the 30s and 40s.
I've been struggling as we kind of talked, pulling up Baseball Reference. And
I've been thinking about it the whole time as well. It's
stuff
tough.
Like that.
It's just tough.
But looking ahead, this could be a really fun series.
Yeah, I agree.
And we talked about it last week, the Ewing theory.
It's
in full effect. I have
Please
been
no.
uh, really giving Zook the gears about that one. And I don't think maybe we touched on it last week, but of course Daniel Hudson, his wife was giving birth in the midst of these playoff run, and he took time off and went and did the right thing. He went and was there for the birth of his daughter, and kudos to him and congratulations to the family. The daughter is healthy and everyone's doing great.
Mazel tov.
I think there's good karma. As much as, like, and I had to mute some of the commentators just because they were in the classic, why is this guy not playing?
You got
to
do it for your team.
But shout out to Sean Doolittle, who's always been, like,
love dude,
a great guy. I mean, love back dude, when he was on the Athletics, fantastic. Love that guy. You know, when the certain group of fans in Oakland objected to the LGBTQ night, he bought all their tickets back and gave them to youth organizations that support queer youth, and I was like, this guy's fantastic.
Yep. Yeah, he's a wonderful human being.
And of course stood up for his teammate Daniel Hudson and basically
former Blue Jay.
Called out everyone who questioned his decision to be there for his family. There was a great sort of ticker timeline piece about Daniel Hudson on ESPN beginning of this week. And about, you know, him watching the game while holding his new daughter in the birthing room, and that the commentators are like, he's missing, and his wife is like, well, you're not missing, you're right here. I tweeted that one out on At the Bench Jockeys and would encourage people to read it if they haven't read it yet. So I think there's some good karma points coming to the Nats for this. And I just stress again, I know that Zook hates this because it's not the Expos, but this is the year that they wore the throwback Expos unis.
Yep.
And it is the 25th anniversary of the lockout. Like this, that was the team ostensibly that was going to bring the trophy to Montreal.
You know, and it's
like that was a juggernaut.
Yes, they were. It remains to be seen about whether or not they would have been able to beat the juggernaut White Sox on the other side, but I kind of feel like they probably would have. It's also kind of crazy how much this mirrors the path of the hockey team in Washington, right? They had this amazing, incredible juggernaut team for years and years and years.
Great regular season team.
Yep.
Always fell apart.
Always fell apart in the playoffs, especially in like game sevens. And then the year where everyone writes them off, they're out of the playoffs for a little bit, they're kind of coasting through, they lost some important pieces, then they go ahead and they win. This mirrors it incredibly. I'm not saying they're going to beat the Astros. Right,
we're not talking about the like perennial NL East champions.
They snuck in.
They snuck in, and they had to like fight for it, and then they rolled the Cards.
Yeah, they beat,
like,
they beat the
Dodgers
as well.
Demolished the Cards.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't even a particularly close series. Like, it was not a close series. How many times...
That near no-hitter in game one, that was it.
Yeah.
It was over.
The rest of them, like, there was a couple times where they were putting up, like, seven runs in, like, the first couple innings. And I would go, you know, I'd be like, oh, yeah, there's a baseball game on tonight. And I would go look at the score, and it was already over. Like, it was 7-0 or 8-0 for the Natties. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm loving this. It's incredible.
Put their foot on the Card's neck in game four, too.
Yeah. Like, there's no chance. You're
second
not coming back.
Was, okay,
we're,
you're done.
We're batting around in the first inning.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Loving that. Off field, you know, of course, there's still three teams in it. Of course, Yankees, Astros on the AL side, and of course, the Nats, who are going to be really well rested and ready for this World Series. But there's a whole bunch of other teams, and things are happening. Joe Maddon, now the Angels manager. I don't know what you think about this one. We haven't talked about it yet.
I mean, are you telling me that one of the best managers in the game is going to pair up with the best hitter in the game?
I was going to ask if you're excited
player
about the Mike
in baseball?
Trout.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Mike Trout play
the
playoff.
The Mike and the Madden show?
Yeah, I'm excited to see Mike Trout play playoff baseball. Yeah, it's going to happen. Madden will figure out a way to get them there. Plus, he's a lifelong Angels fan too, right? His dad was an Angels fan. When they won the World Series, he put his dad's Angels hat on while he was celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's always kind of cool to see like a homecoming thing. And yeah, I'm very excited to see Joe Maddon and Mike Trout team up to see what they can get up to. I really wish that Maddon was going to be the Jays manager, get Charlie out of there and get Maddon in. But, you know, Rodgers doesn't want to spend money, so who am I kidding? He's going to be great in Los Angeles. It's going to be fun to watch. They're an automatic league pass team, if you want to call it that. They're on my radar every single night. So, Madden, Otani, Trout, gimme.
On the so we were talking about the Ewing theory. Of course, Bryce Harper in Philly for an extended period of time. Philly looking for a manager, and apparently, according to MLB.com's Todd Zielecki, three people have been interviewed already and will be interviewed again. I think you're going to love this list.
Oh, God.
Buck Showalter.
Oh, God.
Joe Girardi.
Oh, well, I don't mind Joe.
And Dusty Baker.
Oh, no. No. Two of those three are bad options. Run away. Run away. Hire Girardi. That's the answer.
Yeah.
Hire Girardi.
Of that three, if it's those three, I mean, that is definitely.
Girardi outperformed his Pythagorean every single year he managed the Yankees. That guy is, and one World Series. Right? Like, that guy's good. He's not Dusty Baker, who blows up in the playoffs. And while Buck Showalter was a good manager at one point in time, he's not anymore. He's not. He's lost his step. He hasn't kept up with everything. And, oh, by the way, thanks for leaving Zach Britton on the bench.
Girardi's name also linked to the Cubs, who are replacing Joe Maddon, who obviously moved to the Angels. But the other names that they're talking, David Ross.
I think they're pretty married to Grandpa Ross.
You know, former catcher for them. But one other name that has been bandied about, and apparently he had a bang-up interview that NBC Sports Chicago's David Kaplan quoted a unnamed source, is Joe Espada, who is the Astros bench coach, and apparently had a sensational interview that has maybe
interesting
earned himself a foot in the door.
Interesting. Theo is always kind of looking for new and interesting ways to go about it, so I doubt he's going to go back to the well with Girardi, especially with the way that roster is constructed. I don't think they need a hard hand like Girardi. I think they probably need a little bit of a softer touch. So I'll be interested to see where they go, but I'll be surprised if it ends up being the wrong choice. I just trust Theo so implicitly.
The Mark Feinsand from MLB.com saying that the Giants actually are planning to interview Espada as well for the Bruce Bochy retirement managerial opening. I kind of feel bad for Espada if that's where it ends up, because the Giants just kind of languishing.
They're going to be bad for the next 10 years.
Whereas, like, the Cubs, there's raw potential there. Obviously, this is a squad that has done it, and, you know, obviously kind of fell off in the waning days of the, of
honestly,
the playoff run.
They just need pitching.
There's a path.
They just need pitching.
And they've got Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer in the front office. So
they'll figure it out.
It's doable.
They just need pitching. The hitting's there. They just need pitching and to stay healthy.
Whereas the Giants,
they're going to be bad for 10 years. That's how long it takes to rebuild a farm system. They're going to be bad for 10 years. Like a decade. It's crazy, but.
Yeah. Apparently, yeah. So Buck.
Buck is the wrong call. Buck is the wrong call.
Meanwhile, Gabe Kapler, who left the Phillies, has been also linked to the Giants. And so that one amuses me as someone who enjoyed Gabe Kapler's interviews and personality, because I don't know. I mean, he fits San Francisco, but I don't know if he fits the Giants.
Fair.
Let's say it there. We pretty much have to wrap it up because Democracy Now! Is up next. We will be back next Friday. It'll be the Pledgerama show. And I got some baseball relics for folks who pledged for this show.
I'll have some stuff as well.
And, of course, we'll be talking World Series baseball.
Yep.
Nothing finer. And we will invite you to make a pledge. You can pre-pledge now at umfm.com/donate if you want. And you can choose the bench jockeys on the old drop-down box if you want. And we will see your names and we'll get you something for making a pledge. Thanks for tuning in. And
no,
since he's not here.
I'm not. Zook's a coward for not showing up. I'm not doing it.
He didn't do it. Like I said, I think he broke his phone in anger. So we will have to sign off here and wish you a great weekend.
See ya.